It is time now. Once a month, we get a chance to check in with Pam Perry. She joins us to talk birds and critters. She's a retired DNR non-game wildlife biologist in the Brainerd Lakes area. Welcome back, Pam. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Heidi and John.
Hey, yeah, Pam.
It's a cool morning.
It's, you know, if you're a bird, you're going to want to be at the feeder right early on and stay all day.
And I just filled my feeders, and they're busy. They're very, very busy. I'm going through lots of peanuts and suet and other things.
Yes. Well, yeah. Yeah. They're definitely dining regularly at my feeder as well. And I went out last night, well, yesterday afternoon, and replenished everything so that they would be right away early this morning. When I won't be there, they will still have some good munching to do. Yeah. Get that body temperature back up to near normal. Before we get too far into this, Pam, I have a question, and I'm sorry to divert you if this is not right where you wanted to start.
Of course you have a question.
Students and I, augered a hole into a settling pond near the Cohasset School, and right up in the slush with the auger came a tadpole that, honest to God, and you can see there is my thumb, it was as big as my thumb. It was 3 or 3.5 inches long. The head on it was at least an inch wide and probably an inch and a quarter long. It had developed legs. It was the biggest tadpole I think I have ever seen. And it was in this tiny pond. And probably right up near the surface, near the layer of ice and water. I've got a lot of questions about that. What species of frog might it have been? Why was it up there? Would there have been more oxygen there at the surface? Yeah, go ahead. Fill me in. I'm curious.
Well, I would guess it was a leopard frog or a green frog.
Okay.
The size, I mean, bullfrogs are not common in Minnesota.
Right. I eliminated, you know, bullfrogs right away.
Yeah. And so I would guess it was either a green frog or a leopard frog. And it's just that they can stay in that tadpole stage for a while, and they grow quite big before they metamorphose into a frog. And you said this one already had some legs.
Yep.
And, you know, it was saying, come on. Yeah. And it was warm. You know, it was staying unfrozen, basically.
Yeah.
Just taking its time, and it will turn into a frog.
It may have.
As soon as the conditions are right.
Right. Yeah.
But those are the two that come to mind.
Yeah. And
most likely a leopard.
Oh, really? The coloration obviously probably doesn't have anything to do with what it will develop into, but the coloration was sort of more what I would call green frogish, you know. It didn't have the little green band near its eye, but it was kind of that mottled sort of dirty brown green color that you associate with green frogs. I don't know. I thought that, well, I guess because it's a tadpole, it could be anywhere, but I was thinking that a leopard frog would have been more in a lake or in the river rather than in this little settling pond. But,
well, and I tend to think of green frogs more in lakes.
Yes. Yeah.
And lake shores and bigger bodies of water. And I think of leopard frogs wherever.
You know, they can Here's be a good spot smaller. To lay my eggs. Yeah.
Either one or the other.
And am I correct in thinking that that some frogs, some tadpoles, actually spend 2 years in the tadpole stage?
Mm-hmm.
And is that elective? Is that by design? Is it by rule? In other words, if it's green frogs and leopard frogs, are they all going to be 2 years in development, or?
No, you're getting beyond my knowledge, John.
All right.
I think of frogs and herps often as, if the conditions are right, they grow fast if there's lots of food.
Hmm.
If the conditions are not as good, things are slower just because they're cold-blooded, ectotherms. Mm-hmm. And so things happen faster when it's warmer and there's lots of food. But I do know that both of those species will overwinter as tadpoles.
Okay. All right. Well, it has been a wonderful experience. There was a lot of astonished folks, and I will say folks because the teachers, the instructors, yours truly, and 28 little kids were all pretty surprised.
It's fun to find something you haven't seen before.
Absolutely.
That's why biology in the outdoors is so great.
Yeah.
Sometimes you go, what is this? I've never seen this before.
Yeah.
And I still do that.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I do too. And I think that's what, that's what pushes us to keep going. It's like, wow, what will today bring? What exciting discovery will I find today? Yeah.
You just don't know.
Exactly. Well, I brought us to tadpoles. Would you like to continue with the frozen frogs theory theme, or do you want to move to birds first?
No, let's do frozen frogs first.
All right. Cool.
Because, this time of year, we're often thinking about how do the critters make it through the winter when it's so cold? There's a lot of different strategies. And when we look at birds, at the feeders, of course, they have to eat. They have to find food. And they have some strategies that they can do at night or going into the snow or gathering in cavities or different things. But what do frogs do? And there's two main strategies for frogs. There are frogs that overwinter under the water and absorb oxygen through their skin. And they're the leopard frogs, the green frogs, mink frogs, which are lake frog. They do that and they get very cold. They slow way, way down. And they just stay under the water, under the ice, where it's not frozen, but it's cold. And then we have the frozen frogs. And these are the ones that actually are in the leaf litter, and they freeze. And then they come back to life. And I think this is just amazing. I like frogs. I've liked frogs since I was a kid and would go along the lakeshore catching frogs and going, hey, look what I caught. I just love frogs. So we've got four species of frogs in our area that do this, where they freeze. And it's the wood frog, the two gray tree frogs, the regular gray tree frog and copes, and then the peepers. And they do it by developing an antifreeze kind of with sugar. They eat a lot in the fall, and then they supersaturate their organs with the sugar, glucose, so that they don't freeze. And the water, and then they dehydrate as well because it's ice crystals that damage the cells. Like we can't freeze. If our tissue freezes, we get frostbite and the tissue's damaged. Yep. Because of the ice crystals. But so these frogs can do this. And then if you find them in the leaf litter, they look dead. They're frozen. But then they slowly come back. And when it starts, they warm up, things start working again. But they protect their vital organs from freezing with this supersaturated sugar solution.
Yeah. Yeah. I have read about that.
I think that's amazing.
It is astonishing.
And they can withstand 20 below.
Yeah. Yeah. And how they do that, how they come back to life at the end of that. If you had one in your hands right now, if you went outside and dug one up, it would be like a hockey puck. It would have all the life of a hockey puck.
It looks dead and frozen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then they can come back in the spring.
Astonishing.
So that's pretty cool. Think of that when you hear them in the spring.
Now,
like the peepers, oh, yeah, these guys were frozen.
I wanted to ask you about the chorus frog. Is that also a freezing frog? Or is the chorus frog?
I'm not sure about chorus frogs. when I was just checking all the species, I was going, well, what do chorus frogs do? And I didn't find anything on it.
Okay.
So I'm going to just say, I don't know.
All right.
What I did find were those four that I mentioned that do the freezing and the leaf litter.
The beepers, the two tree frogs, and the wood frog.
And the wood frog.
The wood frog is the largest one. It's going to be kind of brown, and it's going to have a little black mask.
The black mask is distinctive, and they're the ones often in your lawn when you're mowing the grass and you're trying not to hit them.
Right. Right.
I get lots of wood frogs around my house.
Likewise, yeah. And I'm always happy to see them. And I have seen, I have a wonderful picture of one that is almost red in the red sense that a horse is red, you know. So they run the gamut from sort of dirty, muddy brown all the way to this sort of reddish color. But they are all.
Yeah, and they can change color with the temperature too.
Oh,
a lot of frogs can do that.
I had no idea.
The tree frogs are the most famous because they go from green to, they can go green to gray.
Mm-hmm.
But the color is indicative somewhat of their state. I remember finding a couple of years ago, I was hiking in the spring over at Father Hennepin State Park, I think it was, and came upon a leopard frog that was dark, dark brown, almost no spots, dark brown, barely moving. And we were on a trail not far from the water. And I was going, oh, it just came out. It just came out. It's looking for some sun to warm up. And I think if we would, and I didn't bother it. I didn't pick it up, but I think it would have been very, very cold.
We're speaking with Pam Perry. Pam is a retired wildlife biologist, non-game wildlife biologist from the Minnesota DNR, and she is quite well-versed in amphibians. They have been a favorite of hers for a long time, and we're thrilled to talk to you about them because we like amphibians too.
We like amphibians.
You were talking about...
We don't have a lot of them up here, but... A lot of variety, but we can get large numbers of the ones we do have.
Yeah.
I did want to mention Evening Grosbeaks because picked up a magazine. I was reading about research being done on Evening Grosbeaks because they've done this dramatic decline.
Oh, my, yes.
And for people who've been around in the North Country for some decades, they'll know that in the 80s, it used to be we got flocks of evening grosbeaks coming into feeders, and people complained that they were going through 50 pounds of sunflowers a week.
Yeah.
And now I checked my records. I have not seen one here in Crow Wing County since 2007.
Mm. Yeah.
And the breeding bird surveys have shown like a 75% population decline.
Huge. Overall. This is
overall.
Wow.
The North American population.
Wow.
And so they're doing research on them. They're putting radio tags on them. The one place I have seen evening grosbeaks is Saxim Bog. And they are there in the winter. They do come in, and they are, that's part of the research as well. And they're trying to figure out what's going on with these birds, because that's a dramatic decline. And they're finding that they really like spruce budworm outbreaks.
Yep.
And they're also very prone to window collisions because they fly low and they're in backyard feeders when they do come in. So it's, I don't know. They haven't definitively figured out what's going on, but there's probably a combination of factors. And they're thinking about working maybe with foresters to reduce pesticide spraying when you get the spruce budworms.
Oh, okay. I have some friends who live kind of north of the Saxim Bog in Cherry, Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't heard from them this year, but for the past several years, they have had a flock that shows up at their feeders all winter long. I had a flock of evening grosbeaks, and I don't remember now exactly when, but within the last 5 years, show up at my feeder and stay for a week or 10 days and then disappear again. But back in the 80s, I used to have 50 of them that came every day and sat on the feeder. Just, you could not land another bird in there. And they just ate and ate and ate and ate and ate. And yep. I didn't hate that. I mean, I was thrilled that I had such lovely birds. They are gorgeous. Maybe you could describe them for our listeners, for some who have never seen them.
Yellow and black. The males are.
Yes.
And I used to call them Northwoods parrots.
Oh, sure.
Because they have a really big bill.
They do have a gross beak, don't they?
Yeah, gross beak, which means big beak.
Yep, yep.
And yellow and black. They're unmistakable. And they're big.
They're roughly the size of a robin. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Shorter tail, but basically a stocky kind of a bird.
And they have a big head and then this huge bill. And they're quite distinctive. One of the surprising research results that they found at SACSIM was that because they were putting radio tags, catching the grosbeaks and putting radio tags on them, and they found that some of them stayed local to nest rather than going further north. But they become extremely secretive when they're nesting.
Wow.
So people don't know they're there, and they don't come into the feeders then. They're feeding on insects and natural seeds.
Yeah.
So I want to do a quick mention of a couple programs upcoming. Normally we have Bird Club the second Thursday of the month, and we canceled our program for this week because of the cold. It was just so many of our people travel a ways to get there, and we just thought it would be a low turnout, and we had Mike North scheduled as a speaker, and we're going to have him on later in the winter or next year, fall or winter then. But I do want to mention the Audubon program, which is the end of the month, and it should be warmer by then. I think it should be good, but on Wednesday, February 26th, they meet the fourth Wednesday of the month. They're going to have Adam Molesky talking about common terns and piping plovers and the work that's being done at Lake of the Woods. And that should be very interesting.
Yeah.
Both of those species are rare in Minnesota, and they've been working up in Lake of the Woods for quite some years, especially controlling foxes.
Yeah. My friend
because
Jeff Burchard.
Because as ground nesters, these birds were... they were very prone to predators.
Yeah. My friend Jeff Burcham has been part of that study. He's a retired game warden up there. And he's worked on that study and always has really interesting things to say about what they're doing there.
Yeah, it's very interesting, very different. We have common terns on Mille Lacs Lake nesting, but otherwise they're rare. There's some in Duluth, I think.
Yep.
There still are. But anyways, that'll be an interesting program. Wednesday, February 26th, 7 p.m. at the Arboretum.
All right. Pam, it's always a thrill to talk to you. I look forward to it each month. Thank you again for joining us this morning. It's so delightful to speak
it's
with
fun.
You.
It's fun. And I was hoping for a better weather report from Tornado Bob.
I'll let you excoriate Tornado Bob.
Pretty cold. Thanks, Pam. We'll talk to you next month.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.